You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hello, everybody. I'm Anthony Pastorman. Thanks for tuning in to our weekly AL Central podcast. And the 2016 season is underway. How exciting, right? We've been gearing up for this for a long time, but we still have just one last bit of preview material for you. We're going to look at each team in the division by way of over-unders, talking with each beat reporter from the AL Central and getting their take on various statistics we will throw their way. Let's see what they have to say. Thanks for tuning in. Here we go. First, Rhett, let's break down opening day. A fun day at Camden Yards with the rain delay that wasn't, and then the rain comes after the game starts. That's always a fun adventure, right?
Yeah, pretty much. It started raining after they decided to play there. They waited for about an hour and a half to play the game. It never really rained at all, and sure enough, they play, and they get two innings in. Ruben Santana only goes two innings in the opening day start, the first one of his career. But the bullpen pitched pretty well. The only guy who really struggled with was Casey Thien. Otherwise, Ryan Pressy looked good. Trevor May looked really good. Kevin Jepsen kind of blew it there at the end. The two-out walk to kind of end up haunting him there at the end. But otherwise, the bullpen was pretty good. The offense didn't do much outside of one inning, but obviously it was just the first game of the year.
Yep, just one of 162. Of course, the bullpen will be a talking point all year. We'll see how that develops. But for now, we're going to look at some other talking points. We're going to throw out some numbers at Rhett and see what he thinks. So first of all, I'm going to start with Joe Mauer, Rhett. He had a .277 batting average in 2014. .265 last year. This is a guy you obviously used to pencil in for something over .300. Those days are gone, but I'm going to throw out .275, which would be just below that 2014 mark. Do you think he can get over .275 batting average this season?
I think he can. I think that it's more likely maybe in the .280s. I think at this point, any kind of hopes of him hitting in the .300s probably aren't going to happen at this point after the last two seasons. But I think he's still good enough to hit .280. Kind of curious to see how this all goes with the sunglasses during day games and kind of issues that he had with his vision the last few years after the concussion. If that really is going to make a difference, hard-pressed, I believe it's going to make a huge difference, you know, but at the same time, I do think there's more in the tank there. I do think he's better than what he's shown. But, yeah, I think something maybe 285 is kind of safe. But anything above that at this point probably surprised me.
All right. Sticking with batting average, which I know is not the most popular stat in the world anymore, but who cares? We're going to have fun with it. Byron Buxton is obviously a person of interest going into 2016 for the baseball world at large. A lot of people touting him as a Rookie of the Year candidate. We talked about before, he's eligible for the Rookie of the Year, but barely after last season. And in his minor league career, Rhett, he hit .300 on the nose. Of course, hit .209 last year in a small sample in Minnesota. What do you think? .300 batting average. Can he do it in what is technically his rookie season?
I don't see it at this point. Right now, offensively, he's still kind of searching for things. Yesterday, struck out three times on opening day. I think that there's certainly a lot of potential there offensively. I just don't see it's going to happen in the first year. I think he'd even hit .250 to .270 in that range. The Twins would be happy with the way he can be defensively. Even in the first game of the year, he made a couple incredible catches in the outfield. He's a great base runner. So I think if he could hit, you know, in the .260 range, even with an okay on base percentage, if he can kind of figure out the strike zone a little better.
I think
for his career, he certainly can be a guy who can be a 300 hitter with a high on base percentage and a lot of, you know, doubles, and he has surprising power. I think he's going to be an elite offensive player. I just don't know that he's quite ready yet. You know, obviously just one game yesterday, just small sample size of three strikeouts, but even watching him in spring, I think there's a chance he'd have a breakout year, but I think it's going to be probably more likely next year than this year.
All right. Well, one guy who's broken out from a power perspective the last couple of years is Brian Dozier. Hit 28 home runs last year after 23 in 2014. He had 18 in 2013. I'm going to set it at 25. Can he top 25 home runs at the end of 2016?
He can top 25 home runs. That kind of power he has. But I guess it's going to be up to the pitchers kind of facing. He's a guy that really definitely loves fastballs up in the zone. So if pitchers challenging him, he's going to hit a home run. You know, but if the pitchers kind of can kind of stay away from that and stay away from the inside fastball or the, you know, fastball up in the zone. You know, Dozier, the guy whose batting average has gone down a little bit, but I do think the big thing he's been working on this spring and in general is to kind of use more of the whole field, get that batting average up, especially right now because he's, you know, leadoff hitter. If he can get that average up a little and obviously get his on-base percentage up as well, that would help the Twins a lot. Obviously, his power is something they're counting on, but I think if he can get on base more, I think that'd be even kind of a bigger thing for this team. But I certainly think 25 home runs is in the realm of possibility with Dozier. Has a lot of raw power. But it's kind of going to depend on how much he's challenged at the plate by the pitchers this year.
Yeah. Miguel Sano, home runs, 18 in half a season last year. I'm not going to double that up and set it at 36, but I will set it at 30. Will he cross the 30 home run threshold in 2016?
I think he will. I think that Sano has about as much raw power as anybody in the game. He's got a great approach at the plate. The kind of the difference between him and Buxton, it seems like Buxton's always kind of in 0-2 counts or 1-2 counts, whereas Sano is always in, 2-1 counts or 3-2 counts. He always finds himself in a pretty good hitting count there and knows what to do with a fastball or even a breaking ball that's in the zone. A lot of strikeouts for him as well, but I think with him, he has so much raw power, and I think once he kind of gets into the groove here, I definitely think he's got the chance to hit 30 home runs and potentially even more. I think doubling that total is something that could possibly happen as well. But I think the 30 is a pretty safe bet at this point with how good he is. The biggest thing, really, truthfully, is if he can stay healthy. I'm playing in right field for the first time. Last year, dealt with some of those hamstring issues, a little bit of injury prone late last season, but ended up playing through it. But if he had something like that this year, I assume that would hurt his chances of hitting more than 30 home runs.
Young Ho Park hit 53 home runs in Korea. I'm setting it at 53. No, just kidding. 25. Let's set it at 25. Let's be reasonable. Can he get 25 or more?
That's pretty much exactly what I projected, Matt. 25 home runs. I think he can hit around 280, five home runs, maybe, between 80 to 90 RBIs, hitting fifth to sixth in the lineup. He's got legit raw power. He saw it in spring training, a couple long home runs. Even yesterday, it was good to see him get that first hit out of the way. This month is kind of always tough when you come into a new league, kind of searching for that first hit, and it's kind of nice to kind of get that first hit out of the way. It went sharply up the middle for a single. Also got hit by a pitch and showed some good base running scoring on a play down the line. But I do think he has that kind of power. I think that he's got 25 home run power. Like I said, this team has a lot of guys with some power potential, guys like Dozier we talked about, and Sano and Park. Obviously, Plouffe's another guy can hit home runs. But I do think that Park's going to hit between 25 and 30. Any more than that would surprise me, but I do think 25 is a reasonable number.
All right, just a few more for you right here. We're going to knock out a few on the pitching staff. Kyle Gibson, been touted as sort of a breakthrough candidate for 2016. Now, here's something for you. 3.84, that was his 2015 ERA and his minor league career ERA. How about that?
Wow.
So I'm going to set it right there. The fates are speaking to us with that one. 3.84, can he clear that number in 2016?
I think he'll be under that. I think Gibson's definitely a breakout candidate. We saw his strikeout rate kind of rise throughout the season. Obviously, the ERA went up a little bit late last season as well. But I think he was the most consistent starter last year. If he can kind of get that curveball working, which is something he's been working on a lot, throwing in a little bit more this spring training and his changeup as well, I think that because before that he was always kind of that, sinker-slider mix, which doesn't really result in too many strikeouts generally. It's certainly a mix that can work because he is such a sinkerball guy and gets so many ground balls. Very few home runs, very even hard hit balls off of him. If he can kind of mix in that curveball and that changeup and kind of keep hitters guessing, rack up a few more strikeouts, keep the ball out of play, he can be one of the better pitchers in the league, I think. I think that he's going to have a breakout year. If you look at the stats even last year, him and Dallas Keuchel had pretty similar stats before Keuchel's breakout year. I don't think he's going to be quite to that extreme. Obviously, I don't predict anything close to a Cy Young type of year, but I do think he can certainly post an ERA in the mid-threes or potentially even lower than that.
I am joined by Jordan Bastian, and we are coming to you live on tape from the Progressive Field Media Dining Room, a very popular place to record podcasts.
It's not tape anymore. Anthony, you're showing your age by calling this tape.
MP4. This is an MP4.
Yeah.
I know that. Okay, so we are here, JB. It's opening day, and it's not, because they actually just postponed opening day. And so this podcast, by the time people listen to it, hopefully the opener will actually have been played.
Right.
And somebody will be 1-0. And
so we're going to postpone posting this podcast.
That's usually what happens, right?
Right.
Postponed podcast.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean we can't talk about the season at large, no matter what happens in day one exactly. And we're going to do a little over-under action. That's the theme this week. So, we got 10 of them here, JB.
All right.
To roll through. Let's talk some over-unders. First of all, I'm going to start with Marlon Byrd. Marlon Byrd makes the opening day roster, the veteran 38-year-old power producer. Last year, how many home runs for Marlon Byrd last year?
Over 20, I believe.
Right? 28?
I don't know if it was that high.
I don't know. But this is the kind of thing you should know when you read for a podcast, but whatever. You people at home could look that up. Anyway, I'm going to set it low because he's got a low-profile role here in this club. I'm going to set it at 15 home runs. What do you got for Marlon Byrd?
You know, I mean, that's almost a push. It's hard to say. If I had to take over or under, I'd probably go under just because, sort of as you mentioned, his role is going to evolve. We're going to kind of see how he fits into the mix here when Chisenhall comes back, how this is going to work. But right now I see him mainly as a versus left-handed bat. I think he'll get playing time against right-handers. You know, maybe we'll see how Napoli develops as an everyday guy. You know, maybe Byrd could take some DH at-bats as a right-handed hitter. Santana could move to first. I think there's a lot of moving parts early on. So until I kind of can see how Byrd fits into things, I think you kind of got to take the under.
Okay. Yeah, I would lean towards the under just because it is such an unknown. And the age on top of that. Age and the role. Mike Napoli, we know his role. He is the first baseman. However, he has not had a 20-homer season since 2013 with the Red Sox. Of course, that year turned out pretty well for him and for them. Had a little surge late last season. What do you expect, Mike Napoli? I'm setting it at 20 home runs.
I'm going to put it at over, and mainly it's both role and health is what I'm taking into account there. You know, they look at him right now as an everyday guy, so you can anticipate, I think, in the first half of the season, at least, he's going to be the everyday first baseman versus lefties versus righties. And I also think he's another year removed from that very invasive surgery to help his sleep apnea issues. I think he went through a very unorthodox offseason two winters ago. You know, couldn't really train. He lost a lot of weight. I think that probably took more of a toll on him than people really put credit in, you know, when they look at his season last year. Yeah, I can't even imagine what, as an everyday life guy, going through that sort of thing, not to mention being out there as an athlete, being asked to perform. So I think being a year further removed from that and also another year removed from the hip issues, another year of being a first baseman, you know, I just think, you know, and given the role they're giving him, I think he could top 20.
All right. Tyler Naquin, obviously a big story out of Tribe Camp. The rookie makes the club. And, again, this outfield is so in flux, it's hard to know. So I'm going to say 100 games over or under for Tyler Naquin. 100 games in the big leagues this year.
Out of the chute, I'll go under because he's being used not strictly as a part-time guy, but he's probably won't see a lot of tough lefties. You won't see him in the lineup against David Price on opening day, whenever the Indians play that. And, you know,
opening day.
Also, I just think Terry Francona is going to try and ease him in. And then there's also the chance that, hey, if he runs into some struggles, you know, they won't hesitate to send him down to AAA. He really earned a spot this spring, but playing in Cleveland in April is a whole different animal than Arizona in March. So I'm going to take the under right now.
Yeah, I would probably lean towards the under as well, and that's no knock on Naquin. I think it's just a credit to the very flexible nature of this outfield in general. Part of that obviously revolves around Michael Brantley and the shoulder surgery. And so everybody talks about it, you know, surgery on the lead shoulder, how that can impact you, especially from a power perspective. Last year, Mr. Brantley played through some things as well. He had a 480 slugging percentage, so I'm going to set it right there. 480 slugging percentage over or under post-surgery.
I'm going to take the under. I think even if he gets out hot, I think we just can't predict what he's going to look like come August and September. I think there will be some adjustment period for him with that shoulder, and if that means he gets a few more doubles and a couple less home runs, maybe a few more singles, I just think the slugging will take a little bit of a hit. I think the on-base and the batting average might be right in line, but I could see the slugging taking a hit because of the nature of that injury.
Yeah, I would lean towards the under there as well. Carlos Santana, obviously a favorite of the fan base. You know, not so much. But 250 batting average for Mr. Santana. He was, what, 232 last season?
231 in each of the last 2 years. And because fans just love to focus on his batting average, hey, I'm going to take the under on that as well. Again, I think once upon a time, Manny Acta said this would be a 300 hitter. I think he has shown repeatedly that that's not what he is. He's a 230 hitter. I think the average will once again be between 230 and 249.
Yeah.
But he's still going to hit for power. He's still going to get on base.
And I think maybe the power numbers increase a little this year. I don't know. He says that back bothered him last year. And I also think just having Napoli in the cleanup spot maybe take a little pressure off Santana. So I think the power numbers could be better than last year. You don't want to see him with a sub-400 slugging again. But the batting average, I would take the under.
He's a big X factor for them. Obviously, and moving to the DH role is going to be interesting. All right, pitching staff. We know this is the strength of this club. Let's focus on a few guys in the rotation here. Mm-hmm. Corey Kluber. Now, last season, Mr. Kluber had a 3.49 ERA, but he had a 2.97 FIP.
Look at you with your fancy stats.
Fielding independent pitching. That's what his ERA should have been, basically, if you assume proper defense and whatnot, which now they have. So a 3 ERA over or under for the Klubot.
I will be optimistic and take under, and there's a couple reasons. One is the improved defense. So he's going to have a much better defense behind him this year right out of the gates. And then also the run support can't be as bad as it was last year, and there were times where he stayed on the mound for a couple extra batters or an extra inning while he was losing 1-0 or 2-1 to try and, you know, just help the team and stay out there. And then he'd give up another run or two, and that hurt his ERA. I think a lot of times people forget about that. So 3.49, yeah, his ERA jumped from his Cy Young season. It's fair to criticize that, but I think there were a lot of elements in play there. So I'll be optimistic. I will say he finishes with a sub-3 ERA.
Okay, so now when you're listening to this and you know that Kluber gave up 8 runs on opening day, you know he got ML Bastion.
That's right, ML yeah. Bastion.
Carlos Carrasco, he threw 183 and two-thirds innings last season. Will he cross the 200-inning threshold in 2016?
I think the Indians sure hope so, and I'll say yes. I think he's been building towards that. He had a little bit of an injury issue down the stretch last year that cost him a little bit of time, but he's healthy. He looks strong. He's a big dude. He can haul 200 innings. I think he's going to do it this year.
I think so, too. Cody Anderson is in the rotation out the chute. Trevor Bauer is not. So these two guys will focus on them here. Cody Anderson, first of all, had 7 wins last year, had a solid rookie season, came in strong, won a job in the rotation. 10 wins. I know the wins aren't the be-all and end-all, but help me out here. 10 wins, over or under?
Over, sure. Why not? Okay. He's going to be in the rotation for the start of the season. You know, I think the improvement he showed both physically and stuff-wise this spring was very eye-opening. I've told people to me from watching all of the pitchers, aside from Kluber, he impressed me the most just in terms of, you know, his, I guess, just jump in performance from last year to now. So I'll take over 10.
Merck, also some news. Miguel Gonzalez signed to a minor league deal. So talk me through that one. Obviously, a little depth signing there for the rotation.
Yeah, it's a great depth move for them. You know, Matt Latos struggled. You know, it's interesting. I think the strong suit for the White Sox also could be their downfall because, as Robin said during an interview I did with him at the end of camp, you know, pitching is gonna lead them ultimately. And they have 3 really good starters at the top. You know, Chris Sale is a Cy Young candidate. Quintana, one of the more underrated pitchers or players in the game, and then Carlos Rodon had a great rookie season. So you're pretty good right there. And then, you know, you have John Danks, who's pretty much now the definition of like a 4 or 5 starter, which is not a slight against him. That's actually a pretty good guy to have in your rotation. And Matt Latos, you know, Rick Hahn said before the opening day game that he thinks the best is yet to be seen from him, which, you know, you'd have to hope if you were a Sox fan, because by Latos' own account, the results have not been good through his first few, you know, starts in the Cactus League and then one in San Diego in the exhibition game. So Gonzalez is a guy who, you know, I don't want to say his numbers aren't overwhelming, but he's kind of a 4-pitch mix guy, not an overpowering guy, not a big strikeout guy, but certainly adds to the depth at Triple-A Charlotte and give you options in case, you know, not just, you know what, we're singling out Latos because he struggled so far, but, you know, in case there's some sort of injury or in case there's a guy who's gone for 2 or 3 starts, now you have someone kind of there to replace them. You know, one other guy in the mix. You also have Jacob Turner down there. You have Scott Carroll. You have Eric Johnson. You know, let's face it, Carson Fulmer impressed during spring training, but he's probably, you know, late May, June at the earliest, and that's really pushing it. So, you know, I think if things all fall in place, they prefer to let Carson just continue developing at AA for a little bit, Birmingham, and then go over the hand. So, you know, nice pickup that they didn't talk about the money on this, but
you know, it's a minor league deal, and we'll see, you know, what, how he develops and how he fits in the future.
Got to have depth. I believe last year the average ball club used between 9 and 10 starters over the course of the season. Now, that's obviously not for long stretches. That includes spot starts and whatnot, but obviously you got to have bodies. From
a 9-man rotation would be a little much, wouldn't it? That might get guys a little stale, I think. I remember one year, I think it was either 03 or 04 when I was covering the team, and they used 9 guys just to fill the fifth starter role that year.
Jeez.
Jason Grilley was in there, Arnie Munoz, Josh Stewart, a lot of guys Sox fans will remember the brief stint. So, yeah, you can never, as the old saying goes, you can never have too much pitching, especially if you're like the White Sox and have high hopes for contending this year.
Absolutely. It is a numbers game. And on that note, some numbers. We're going to do over-unders with Mr. Scott Merkin. First off, Todd Frazier, the key offseason acquisition for the lineup. Obviously, did not have a great opening day, and I'm sure people will overreact to that. But as far as the season at large, Merk, he had 35 home runs last year. It was his first time in his career over 30. I'm going to set the over-under at 30. Do you think he can clear that benchmark again in 2016?
I will say slightly over. I think he's hitting in a good hitter's ballpark, you know, especially in the summer, although, you know, they're talking about the first weekend, just that first home series against Cleveland. I think 35 in snow on Friday and 38 on Saturday and then all the way up to 50 on Sunday. So, you know, he'll have to get adjusted a little. Well, he's not really adjusted. He played in Cincinnati, but he'll deal with some cold weather early. But I think just over. And, you know, it's funny, just a quick side on the opening day stuff. I people who watch the Royals and Mets on Sunday night, I already saw some Sox fans on my Twitter feed say, you know, hey, maybe the Royals bullpen might not be as good this year based on Soria giving up a couple runs from game one. Wade Davis is about as close to lights out as, like, you know, Mariano Rivera or Dennis Eckersley in his day. I think one game's a little tough to judge a lot of things on in a 152-game schedule.
That's what we do, Mark. That's what we do.
I agree. So in that case, Chicago baseball will not lose a game as of this taping right now.
Well, that's pretty clear.
Yeah, obviously. They play each other.
If they are going to win 162 games, Jose Abreu would have to be a big part of that, of course.
Correct.
His first season in 14, he had a 964 OPS. Last season dropped down to 850. So I'm going to set it at 900. Will he have a 900 or better OPS?
I will say over 900 or better because of the fact that this is the best lineup he's played with. He's finally got some guys hitting behind him, or at least it looks that way. And I think, you know, he's good enough as it is on his own. But with the guys behind him, I think over 900.
All right. I believe we were saying those things last year, Merk. And that did not go well, but... Obviously,
I wasn't talking about Frazier's homers last year, but did we say over 900? Well, yeah. I mean, but hey.
Well, I believe we were saying he had more lineup support a year ago.
They're already off to a better start than they were last year. They were 0-4
before
they saw the win column last year. So,
Jimmy Rollins had a nice night on opening night, but I'm going to talk about top prospect Tim Anderson. I'm going to throw out the 50 games played mark. Do you think he'll finish over or under that in 2016?
Well,
that is a tough one. Are we going to see Tim Anderson for a serious stretch, not just September?
You know, I thought at the beginning of the offseason, long before Jimmy Rollins was a fixture there, I thought he would see quite a bit of time this year. Now I'm thinking Carson Fulmer is going to see more major league time, not necessarily more major league. I'm going to say under 50 games. I'm going to say that this is a guy who, you know, split time, you know, playing basketball and baseball, is an immensely skilled guy, if that's a phrase. But you know, a little raw still. And they're not trying to force feed him up where he's not ready. He's been known as kind of a level to level guy. So I think I'm gonna say under 50 games this year in the major leagues. I think next year he'll be the starter, but I think in 16 under 50.
How about Fulmer? I'm gonna throw out the over under of 10 starts. Do you think we'll see more than 10 starts from Carson Fulmer at the big league level?
I'm going to say slightly over or right around 10. That seems like a good number. I'm going to say maybe 12 to 15. I don't think he'll be what you saw with Rodon last year, but I think he will be up and help this team this year. So I'm going to say somewhere slightly over 10.
Sounds good to me, Merk. Avi Garcia, a guy whose playing time is a big question mark going into the year. 400 plate appearances. Do you think over or under that for Avi?
I think as they stand right now, definitely over. You know, I the White Sox. You've seen them, Anthony, as a columnist and as a beat writer, watching them from, you know, Cleveland and everything else. They're very proactive. You know, they don't, as they already added Gonzalez, you know, the day before the season started. They won't wait until the trade deadline. So, you know, they could go out and add another bat at some point if that's what they feel they need. As it is right now, though, Avi, you know, with LaRoche gone, Avi is one of the everyday players. So I think, you know, easily over 400 plate appearances.
We had kind of talked about the roster on the last podcast and how it might shake out, and it looks like it went as expected pretty much.
Yeah, it really did. You know, we were wondering whether Chin Ming Wong would be stashed at Omaha until his opt-out date, which is May 1st, but I think we talked about how much better they would be as a 25-man roster with him on it, and Dayton Moore and his staff agreed. So he made it. Terrence Gore made it as an elite base runner and pinch runner, and that's basically what Ned needs that 25th man for. He doesn't pinch hit very much, hardly at all, but he will pinch run, so, you know, Gore has some value there. And that was about it. Raymond Fuentes not only made the team, but started in right field on opening night. So that was pretty cool, too.
I saw Ned Yost was almost apologetic about the pregame ceremony. It was obviously an unusual circumstance to have this game scheduled against the team they ended up facing in the World Series. And having that ceremony right in front of them, I know that was a little bit awkward.
Yeah, it was. And it's going to be even worse here on Tuesday because the ring ceremony is today. So the Mets have to endure that, too, and it's unfortunate for them, but there's really not much the Royals can do. I mean, they've got to do their ceremony for the fans, and, you know, actually Ned also said, too, he was not only, you know, kind of sorry that the Mets had to sit through that, but also he was just anxious to get to the game, and I think the ceremony was probably a bit too long for him because they'd been waiting all spring to play, and then you have, like, a two-hour ceremony, so it was kind of tough for him, but made it through it, and it was kind of a thrilling win on opening night.
It sure was. The only downside of the win, Jeff, it wouldn't be baseball if we didn't overreact opening day, right?
So, yeah, exactly.
Obviously, the one thing that came out of that was obviously the bullpen dynamic, and Joaquin Soria left the Mets back in the game, and Luke Cochaver comes in and settles things down in the bridge to Wade Davis. But just kind of thinking big picture, as far as how that bullpen picture looks and that setup situation, I mean, do you think that could be an intriguing dynamic as we go along here and Ochaver really settles in?
I think they're all interchangeable. You know, yeah. Right now he's got Herrera probably as a seventh-inning guy along with Hoch, and he wants to establish Soria as kind of the eighth-inning guy setting up Wade. And I wouldn't read too much into what happened to Soria the other day. If you go back, sure, his command was off. He walked two guys, and that really stung him. But the balls that were hit looked like they got, you know, hit by a rolled-up newspaper. I mean, they were just so softly, you know, three broken bats, basically, and one ground ball was hit too softly to turn a double play, and then two flares to left field. One actually was hit so weakly that Moustakas was able to track it down himself. So not exactly – the Mets didn't exactly overpower him, but his command was off, and that did let the Mets get back into the game. And actually a pretty thrilling ninth inning, too, with typical Wade Davis, you know, first and third and one out, you know, tying run at third. And what does he do? He strikes out the next two hitters. So kind of a repeat of last October and November.
Yeah, absolutely. It's amazing. Wade Davis just keeps chugging along. We'll talk about him in a sec because we are going to do some over-under.
All right.
That's the theme this week. So I'm going to throw out some numbers at you. And you let me know what you think, Jeffrey.
Right.
We'll start with Eric Hosmer, who I know you touted him as an MVP candidate, so I think I might know your answer to this one. But I'm going to throw out 22 home runs. The reason I picked 22 is that was Mike Moustakas' total from 2015. We know Haas has not had more than 19 in a single season, but certainly a guy who has the look of a potential 20 home run guy. But do you think 22 over or under?
I'm going to go over. Yeah, absolutely. I think this is the year he might elevate to maybe 25, 30.
Well, that would be potentially MVP worthy. We'll see.
Yeah.
All right, Mike. Speaking of Mike Moustakas, I'm throwing out an 825 OPS. My rationale there is he went from 632 to 817 last year, so I'm going up to the next quarter of 100 mark there to 825. Do you think he can top that in 2016?
I'm going to go under. I think he's going to maybe step back just a tiny bit this year, not dramatically, but maybe around the 800 range.
All right. Sal Perez, he went from 17 home runs last year to 21. Obviously, that's great power from a catcher either way, but surpassing that 20 home run mark was a big deal for him. Do you think he'll do it again in 2016? 20 home runs, Sal Perez.
I'm going to go under, but I'm going to say that, too, that the reason for that is he's going to be a little bit more selective at the plate, and his OBP is going to rise dramatically.
Yeah, how big of a focus was that for him this spring?
It was very big, though, I mean, you don't see it in the results. I mean, he didn't walk very many times, but I did see him lay off some pitches he normally hacks at, so we'll see if he carries that over in the regular season.
Well, speaking of on-base percentage, Alcides Escobar, his OBP last year, it went from 317 in 2014 to 293 in 2015. 300 on-base percentage. Do you think he'll get on base more or less than 30% of the time?
I'm going to go over. You know, he had a pretty good OBP in the postseason, and maybe he can carry that into this year. You know, that's not his strength, obviously. He gets up there hacking, but who knows? Maybe you know that's not a very high water mark, 300 OBP. So I think he maybe can manage that.
You'd hope. He was certainly a machine last October. Kendrys Morales was a machine last year, run production machine for this club, and surprisingly so. I'm going to set it at 100 RBI over under.
Easily over. I think he has just another terrific year. He's going to have a lot of guys on base in front of him, and he's proven. He can drive him in. He had a terrific spring. I'll take the over on that.
All right. Lorenzo Cain was a finalist in the MVP balloting last year, largely on the might of his slugging. His power numbers went up last season. His slugging went from 412 to 477. So let's set it right there, 477. Can he top what he did last year?
Yes. He goes over there. I think he's just an ascending player. He keeps learning more and more about, you know, what pitches to attack and how to punish a pitcher. And I think he's going to, you know, hit over 20 home runs this year, and you're going to see more doubles and triples. I think he's going to have a monster year, too.
We got a lot of power coming out of this Royals lineup.
No, I know. I mean, maybe they're going to move the fences in or something. I don't know.
I haven't heard the magic number, which is the Balboni number. I haven't heard that top yet.
That's what was missing from opening day, man.
Let's go to the pitching staff. Edinson Volquez, obviously Steady Eddie, was terrific on opening night.
Yep.
He had 13 wins last season. How about 15 wins in 2016, over or under?
Oh, boy. You know, it's so hard to predict. You know, wins are such a meaningless stat now. But, I'm going to go under. I think he comes in at 13 or 14 again. It's such a hard number to predict.
First of all, Justin Upton, I know you wrote about him recently, batting in that number two spot of the lineup. Before we get into over-unders, talk about that, the value of him in that spot.
Well, you know, he's actually taken a pretty good outlook on it. I mean, you know, I guess nobody's really going to complain about batting in front of Miguel Cabrera. But he said that it should be a lot of fun, and that he can't get too far out of his approach out of it, but that he's going to be kind of tracking how pitchers approach him as the season goes on, that serves a double purpose, because he's going to be playing the American League for the same time. Even if the differences between the two leagues are blurred, there are going to be some guys he hasn't faced much at all, such as some of the guys in the Central included, that he's now going to have to learn a little bit. And it wouldn't be surprising if he keeps maybe not the physical notebook that J.D. Martinez did the last couple of years, but maybe a mental notebook.
Well, he's probably been about as under the radar as you can be when you sign a nine-figure contract. You know, there hasn't been a great discussion about Justin Upton in baseball at large. I think as a function of him kind of blending into that order. And that kind of leads us to our over-unders here. His career OPS mark is 825. Do you think being part of this loaded lineup can put him in a position to top that? I think he'll come in over or under 825.
825, I am going to take the over. I think based on what he was able to do during that stretch when he was batting in front of Freddie Freeman in the Braves lineup, I think he's got some good numbers in him, notably in the on-base percentage. I saw better at-bats in spring training than I figured as far as like a discerning the strike zone and swinging at stuff over the plate as opposed to chasing. I think if he continues that, he should be able to top that.
Yeah, certainly if he has a more consistent season, obviously his numbers are consistent year to year, but if he has a consistent season within the season, he's capable of very big things. Another guy is, of course, capable of big things is Miguel Cabrera. Now, his career OPS plus mark, OPS plus being relative to league average, his career mark with the Tigers is 162, so basically 62% better than league average, which would be 100. So I'm going to throw out at 150 back. Do you think Miguel Cabrera will be better than 50% better than league average?
Wow, that's a tough one. Man, I think he's got it in him. Yeah, I'll take the over on that. I'm really hesitant because I'm not sure how the power is going to look over the course of a full season. But having watched him long enough and having watched him in the spring training, I think if he's healthy, he should be able to get to that point again. I think it's going to be awfully close. And I think if he misses, it's going to be, you know, a few points. And if he makes it, it's going to be a few points. So it could be like a few points either way.
All right. How about here's an interesting one. Speaking of OPS plus, Nick Castellanos, obviously entering his age 24 season, still a guy who could break out at any time. He's yet to clear the league average mark, which, as I said earlier, is 100. Do you think Nick Castellanos will be better or worse than 100 OPS plus?
I think he'll still be under, but I don't think he'll be that far under. I think, you know, this is a big year for him to make a huge amount of progress. For him to be, you know, in that, I guess, upper tier, I don't know if he's quite ready for it yet, but I do think we're going to see steps in the right direction, both in power and I think in, you know, in batting average. I think where the big jump could come would be in RBI.
All right. A traditional stat RBI. I know I went a little crazy there with OPS plus, but let's go back to the traditional numbers back. 38 home runs for J.D. Martinez. That was his total last year. Do you think he can do even better in 2016, or is he going to come in under that?
Wow. How long is that polar vortex supposed to be over the Midwest? Is that going to last for most of the month?
Well, I live in Cleveland, so it might just last till June, so who knows?
I think he's got another 40 homer season in him. Yeah, I think he's still kind of reaching that his potential. I think he's still building off of it. And watching him, he might take a dip in batting average before he takes a dip in home run. I think just the way pitchers approach him now, they're probably going to be more careful. So that might affect some of the batting average. I think the power is still going to be there.
Victor Martinez. Obviously, had a lot of injury issues last season. I'm going to say on the games played tally, 130. Do you think he'll have a bounce back season purely on that, on the ability to post up? Do you think he can clear 130?